Chapter 15, Support and Abundance. Starting the dialogue. My friend Pam and her husband, referred to in the introduction, were not told by the county that the three children they were adopting were seriously abused and neglected. The behaviors of these severely abused children quickly became unpredictable, violent, and frightening. The family worried about the potential for homicide or suicide by the oldest boy, and obvious sexuality problems with the two younger children. There were many years of fear and sadness as these kind and decent people tried to sort out the issues without understanding what caused them. In my experience, it is not uncommon for counties to withhold important information from adoptive parents. Only years after the adoption was finalized did the children start to receive the mental health treatments they so badly needed. The treatments would have been much more helpful had they begun at the time of the adoption. I watched my friend suffer prolonged mental anguish of not understanding the events in her life or knowing what to do about them. She is a strong and bright woman with a capable and supportive husband. They were both overwhelmed by the serious psychotic problems of the oldest boy and the ongoing problems with the girls. Many communities are not set up to monitor sexual abuse cases or the mental health needs of state ward children. This makes it unlikely that they can make important observations and needed recommendations to adoptive parents. Any government body that deceives its citizens or actively works to transfer its problems onto individuals or other government systems is a dishonest government, and it should be redressed for its actions. Another example of bad public policy would be the states that buy bus tickets for homeless people to get out of town. Minnesota's Bus Ticket Forward program bought a one-way bus ticket for 45 homeless people to leave for good Minnesota. This type of policy exemplifies the extremes we the people will go to avoid caring for the weakest and most vulnerable people among us. States and institutions need to comprehend that moving people from their state to another state only exacerbates the problem. Moving children from toxic homes to abusive foster homes or underfunded state facilities only exacerbates the problem. Moving children from child protection to juvenile justice only exacerbates the problem. Once the child has moved into the criminal justice system, they have become a long-term and very serious problem with no easy or effective solution. The answer lies in ending children's progression from the child protection system to the juvenile justice system and on into the criminal justice system. This is a core point of the book and the reason I speak on the topic. Until our legislators take responsibility for the solutions-based approaches that will resolve our problems, we will have to accept the musical chairs approach of one-way bus tickets and public reaction to babies left in dumpsters that now define us as a nation. Quote, "No state fully complies with child protection standards established by the federal government. While some states have gotten national attention because of scandals in their child welfare programs, 16 states, including Minnesota, did not meet any of the 7 standards that focus on children's safety and well-being." End quote. Minneapolis Star Tribune, April 2004. Half measures that try to compensate for the lack of funding and lack of understanding of children's mental health issues guarantee failure. Children with emotional and mental health problems are lost forever because they were unable to get the help they needed, when they needed it. 18-year-old children with a mental development of a 13-year-old are headed for pregnancy or prison and a lifetime of poverty and suffering. Half measures in the training and funding of social workers and resources they need to do their work will also lead to failure. Social workers are committed people trying to make a difference in the lives of the people they work with. I've yet to meet a social worker who has entered the profession for any reason other than an honest desire to bring positive change to troubled families. We would all benefit by cultivating empathy for these children and appreciating the commitment of remarkable people who have chosen this field. Without funding and community support, social workers remain undertrained and have their hands tied when trying to save abused and neglected children from their many problems. When social workers are well-trained and well-supported, they can make a great difference in the lives of the children they work with. When they are not supported, what disappointing and thankless work it must be. The Child Welfare League of America recommends caseloads for child care workers be kept under 15 families. Some systems are operating at over 50 families per worker. Since 1989, Illinois has paid almost $8 million to defend state welfare officials for not doing their jobs. Their caseloads were too great because there were not enough workers to handle the work. With $8 million, the state could have hired 200 child care workers. Some communities find it easier to keep their head in the sand and pay fines rather than create better answers for their abused and neglected children. Think of the wasted money and unnecessary suffering. If there were ever a place for training, support, and abundance, it would be to provide for the people who are taking the burden from the state and raising other people's children. This would solve many problems. There deserves to be at least complete training and support, if not some abundance, for these valiant people. Our rich and fortunate community has grown complacent. We have no roadmap to see where we will be in 10 years. From a humane perspective, we are not seeking happiness or the elimination of unnecessary suffering. Like all grassroots movements, children's issues must be talked about. The dialogue has to occur before change can happen. Call to action. Music, dance, theater, and art give children attracted to these fields a surrogate to close personal contact, love and trust, and a place to express their feelings and passion. Several of my guardian ad litem children have demonstrated superb talent in the arts. It solves so many personal problems when a child discovers self-expression and discipline in the development of their own talents. Facilitating this development takes money or creativity. Here's a creative way to help children find a place to put their passion. You will be surprised how many free pianos can be found in a church congregation if approached properly. Many adoptive or foster parents would put one to good use. Put an ad in your congregation's bulletin, "Wanted: unused pianos for adopted and foster children in working condition." Then, contact Child Protection in your community and let them know when people offer you their piano. I have also successfully contacted local banks to solicit donations that would pay for the moving of pianos. I have also found that music stores will move pianos for free if the cause is a good one. There are many generous people in your community. Find them and ask them to help. In Minnesota, we use pianosforkids.com to list and distribute free instruments and lessons. This approach works for all the arts. Creative people are by nature kind and generous. Make it your work to create a similar venue for other forms of music, theater, dance, and art.